figures. Figure 2.2 in your PDF illustrates this process of calculating your real hourly wage, as well as a corollary figure, the number of hours or minutes of your life that every dollar you spend represents. Remember, the numbers here are arbitrary. Your figures will probably be considerably different from these, as might your categories. Note, if you get benefits from your workplace, like health insurance and matching retirement investments, by all means, add those into your nominal hourly wage. But since not everybody does, we don't include them in these calculations. The bottom line. Figure 2.2 clearly shows that you are actually selling an hour of your life energy for $10, not the apparent $25. Your real hourly wage is $10, before taxes even. A good question to ask at this point is, are you willing to accept a job that pays this hourly wage? You should make this calculation every time you change your job or change your job-related habits. The corollary figure is also interesting. In this example, every dollar you spend represents 6 minutes of your life. Think of that figure next time you're shelling out your money for another $20 Gazingus pin. Ask, is this item worth 120 minutes of my life energy? Is it worth the 2 hours of sitting in traffic driving to work or hunting down future clients? Notice that our calculations have ignored such intangibles as time spent on planning strategies for moving up the corporate ladder, time handling deteriorating family life due to job demands, and time and expenses incurred in maintaining a lifestyle in line with the job. The cost of a job radiates throughout your life in countless ways. When Mark H. did the first part of step 2, his life turned upside down. He had been working as a project manager in the construction industry for 10 years. I wasn't happy with what I did for a living, he wrote, but income equaled expenses, so I went on with the attitude of, well, that's life in the big city. Then Mark did step 2 and calculated his real hourly wage. After I analyzed our spending patterns, it became clear that nearly half of what I made was spent on the job. That is, spent on gas, oil, repairs, lunches, a little here, a little there, and most of it unrecoverable. In short, I could stay home, work part-time where I live, and actually save money by making half of what I formerly made. It was then, when he realized he could give up his job and pursue his real desires and goals, that everything changed. Affairs in his financial life that he had procrastinated on handling for years got handled. Everything from paying off credit cards to eliminating restaurant lunches to having long overdue money discussions with his wife without the old arguments. As he arranged his financial world, he and his wife recognized that they could survive quite well on her paycheck from a job she loved, teaching kids with special needs. And he could go back to school to train for a career he's always wanted as a counselor and therapist. We're actually feeling less stressed because we're focused on healing our crazy relationship with money, not just focused on the bucks. Why do this step? Why is this exercise essential to a transformed relationship with money? 1. This exercise puts paid employment into a real perspective and points out how much you are actually getting paid, which is the bottom line. 2. It allows you to assess current and future employment realistically in terms of actual earnings. It is useful to apply the information gathered in this step to prospective jobs. A job that requires a longer commute or has more costuming expectations might be less remunerative in reality than one with a lower salary. Compare job offers from the true perspective of how much you are really selling your life energy for. 3. Knowing the financial bottom line for your job will help you clarify further your motives for working and for selecting one job over another. Mark H.'s story is not an anomaly. Many, many people spend all of their income and then some on maintaining their job, and consider themselves fortunate. Another FIer said that doing the steps increased his consciousness of unnecessary job-related expenses to such an extent that his net earnings per hour doubled. Once he recognized how many of his expenses were due to his job, he was able to reduce or even eliminate many of them. For example, he began bringing his own lunch instead of sending out to the deli, switched from driving to using mass transit, doubling the benefit of this choice by using the time for decompression on the way home, reevaluated the supposed need for so many changes of stylish clothes, and even began exercising by taking a daily walk with his wife, improving their relationship as well as their health. Someone else used the results of this step as a criterion for accepting or rejecting jobs. When she could figure out just what hourly wage she'd be getting, she could see very clearly whether the job was worth it to her. Indeed, there are some jobs that she might have applied for previously that she now doesn't even consider. No shame, no blame. And remember, this is where your feelings about your work or job or identity will most strongly bubble up to the surface. Compassionate self-awareness is the key. Just notice each feeling as it presents itself without criticizing it, without criticizing your job, your boss, yourself, or this book. So what if you've been paying to work? So what if you've been blowing every paycheck on rewarding yourself for surviving another week? So what if you've been leading a fast-track lifestyle on $10 an hour paycheck? That's all in the past. It's what you thought you needed to do before you knew that money is your life energy. A handy checklist of life energy versus salary. Commuting. Wear and tear for commute miles. Gas and oil, public transportation, parking fees, tolls, maintenance, walking or bicycling, cabs, ride-sharing, insurance, costuming, clothes bought for work, makeup bought for work, impressive briefcase, shaving for work, meals, coffee breaks, lunches, entertaining for work, food rewards for unpleasant job, convenience foods, daily decompression, time until the kids are allowed to yell again, additional time till civil, additional time till able to do anything, recreational substances, escape entertainment, movies, bars, cable TV, online subscriptions, gaming systems, vacations, toys, if to compensate for a job, exercise equipment, sports equipment, boat, summer house, job-related illness, colds, flus, etc., massages to relieve aching back, hospitalizations for stress-related illness, other job-related expenses, hired help to clean house, mow lawn, babysit, daycare for kids, educational programs, professional or trade magazines, conferences, life coach. B. Keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. So far, we've established that money equals life energy, and we have learned to compute just how many hours of life energy we exchange for each dollar. Now we need to become conscious of the movement of that form of life energy called money in every moment of our lives. We need to keep track of our income and expenses on a daily basis. The second part of step two is simple, but not necessarily easy. From now on, keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. Many people intentionally remain aloof regarding money. Their mythology puts money and love, truth, beauty, spirituality in two separate boxes. Plenty of people will show all to a lover, but never show that same person their paycheck. Plenty of families fall deeper and deeper into debt because it seems unloving to call each other out on unconscious spending. Community service groups burn out because they are reluctant to ask for money to pay at least one person to manage the day-to-day tasks of running an organization. Friends never get back the money or things they lend out to others because keeping track seems somehow nasty and insisting on payback even nastier. This happens between parents and children often. Tracking money somehow seems to cheapen transactions that should be based solely on love. All of these situations stem from the same root thought. Money is money, and love is love, and never the twain shall meet. Look at your own attitudes. Do you excuse financial unconsciousness with high-minded philosophical or spiritual ideals? A spiritual discipline. Religions, ancient and modern, all have techniques for training the mind to be here now, in the moment. These practices take many forms and include such seemingly diverse techniques as watching the breath as it goes in and out, repeating a phrase over and over in order to focus the wandering mind, concentrating on an object without entertaining past memories or future fantasies about it, just being with it right now, practicing various martial arts such as Aikido or karate, developing an inner witness to simply observe what you are doing now. To this list, we add another discipline designed to sharpen awareness, one that is indispensable to the financial program and perhaps more easily accepted by our grounded materialistic Western mentality than some of the more esoteric practices. Instead of watching your breath, you watch your money. This practice is simple. Keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. The rule for this highly developed tool of transformation technology is: keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. The methodology for this marvel of monetary metaphysics is: keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. There are no specifications for how to track every cent that goes into or out of your life. There is no official notebook to buy. Only $49.95 with indices, quick reference charts, and a solar calculator. For many people, a pocket-sized memo book is the perfect constant companion in which to note every cent that enters or leaves their lives, along with the occasion of its entering or leaving. Others, more enamored of time than money, log their expenses and income in a special section of their appointment book. And some track their money, along with their appointments, tasks, addresses, and more, on their phones and computers, linking their bank accounts with online tools and only using debit cards or credit cards paid off monthly, so they have an up-to-date record literally at hand. Computers and smartphones are making this easier than ever, but there's no right way to do it. Whatever works best for you is the best method. Some people stumble here. They don't want to track their money. Too hard, too anal, too much time, too confronting. Every penny? How about every dollar, every $10, or kind of more or less? Carolyn H. is a natural tracker, but her husband is not. He says that the emphasis on every penny is not helpful. Most people just don't want to live like that. Years ago, she said, as part of my method of bringing him on board with tracking, I streamlined our tracking to better suit him, and it's been a success. We use round numbers. We track cash as best as we can, but don't make a fetish of it. We allow for a minimum amount of unaccounted for cash and add a category for that. Sometimes there's almost nothing there. Sometimes after a complicated month, there might be as much as $200 there, which used to drive me crazy, but now doesn't. Here's why. Interestingly, my husband has begun to watch that number and really try to get it down to a trivial or at least reasonable amount. Seeing a large number there has gotten his attention about being more aware of his spending, and far more effectively than all the talk, argument, FI reading, etc. ever did. I'm pleased. Mike L. led voluntary simplicity groups for years and encouraged everyone to do the steps religiously, the way he and his wife had, with stunning results. He was an every penny stickler. When he and his wife moved to a fixer-upper house in a new community, though, Mike finally developed some understanding of his group members' feelings of being overwhelmed with Step 2. He decided to be his own contractor and builder. His number of daily financial transactions shot up, as did the time he spent each day uncrumpling receipts and logging expenses. He decided to be satisfied with using a debit card and having his bank send his data to his financial program, simplifying his life this way until his spending settled down. One person noted that the financial ninja types mentioned in the introduction to this book find tracking as natural as breathing and need no convincing, while for right-brain people, known for their creativity and intuitive thinking, it's like writing with their non-dominant hand. Karen E. wrote, "I love tracking, still do it after 14 years. Can't imagine not. It's enabled us to figure out how to live half-time in Europe, on a houseboat in France, and half-time in the States, to volunteer as we wish, and to travel as well." She's a natural. Minimalists and creative types have adopted strategies like Mike L's, pay for everything with a debit card, and get a surprising amount of peace from gaining control of something that had been an utter mystery. When they link tracking with time to create, meditate, or travel, they are willing to develop the habit. Once Don S., a young fan of Mr. Money Mustache's blog about personal finance and early retirement, started tracking, a clearer view of where his income was going led him to swap restaurant lunches for packing a lunch to bring to work and doing more home cooking. He says, "For me, it wasn't about limiting my spending in some authoritarian way to try and be more responsible. It was about understanding how I was currently spending my money in a guilt-free way. I was able to cut this food expense category by nearly 50%, saving hundreds of dollars a month. My awareness of how I was spending my money allowed me to rein in wasteful spending in a way that felt instinctual, and then put that money toward the things that were more important to me and my overall happiness. Those few $100 of savings each month quickly added up to cover a 3-week trip to Europe. Being more efficient with my money meant I was happier overall, saving more money for the future, and less stressed about spending money on things that bring me joy." Whatever system you choose, do it. The program only works if you do it. And be accurate. Let it become a habit to record any and all movements of money, the exact amount, and the reason for the exchange. Every time you spend or receive money, make it second nature to note it instantly. In The Millionaire Next Door, the authors Thomas J. Stanley and William D. Danko note that people who have achieved a high net worth relative to income know how much they are spending on clothes, travel, housing, transportation, and so on. And those who don't achieve high net worth relative to income have no idea how much they spend. It's a stark contrast. Figure 2.3 in your PDF is a fictional example of 2 days' entries. Note the degree of detail given for each expenditure. Notice how expenditures at work are specifically labeled as such. Observe the differentiation of the expenditures at the convenience store between snacks, chips, dip, and soda, and batteries. Similar differentiations of spending categories are made in Saturday's grocery store and department store trips. The subcategories or breakouts within the total are rounded to approximations, though you are certainly encouraged to be close to your approximations. It would be time-consuming to calculate the exact cost of toilet paper, wine, etc., but the total must be accurate to the penny. Every cent? But why? Remember that the purpose of this procedure is simply to keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. Why, you may ask, do I need to go to such great lengths? Because it's the best way to become conscious of how money actually comes and goes in your life, as opposed to how you think it comes and goes. Up to now, most of us have had a rather cavalier attitude towards our small daily monetary transactions. In practice, we often reverse the old adage of a penny wise, pound foolish. We might search our souls and discuss with our partners the advisability of spending $75 for a new four-color left-handed Wiebelfitzer. Yet over the course of a month, an even larger amount often goes out of our wallets in small, insignificant purchases. But must I keep track of every cent, you might ask? Yep, every cent. Why every cent, rather than just rounding off to the nearest dollar or using approximate figures? Because this helps to establish important lifelong habits. After all, how big is a fudge factor? How close is close enough? Granted, in practice, many FIers settle into rounding to the dollar, but that's as far as they slip. Human nature being what it is, if you start cheating, even a little bit, that little bit tends to get bigger, and soon you'll find yourself thinking, well, I don't have to write everything down, just the major expenses. And then, well, I've done this for a month now, so I think I'll start rounding off to the nearest 1,000. It's like dieting. If you break your diet on Tuesday morning by having buttered English muffin instead of dry toast, the tendency is to cheat even more, and by evening you're gobbling down a carton of ice cream and pound cake. If you want this to be a worthwhile undertaking, it's worth your while to do it right. If you rebel against every penny, try every dime or dollar, or euro or yen. But more than that, is a little like eating 10 slivers of cake as though it were nothing rather than face the big fat slice you're actually consuming. Since the original writing of this book, credit cards have become second nature in consumer culture. Now getting a credit card is almost a rite of passage into adulthood. While credit cards bring many efficiencies, they enable you to spend more carelessly and unconsciously. If you're having trouble tracking your money, we encourage you to go plastic-free for a month. Withdraw cash from your bank and keep track of how much you spend throughout the month. Not only will you gain a greater awareness of spending, you'll most likely find it more motivating to save. Many diligent savers find this exercise brings them back to earth about their spending habits. Since money has a direct correlation to your life energy, why not respect that precious commodity, your life energy, enough to become conscious of how it's spent? You may have some initial resistance to doing this impeccably, but ultimately this step must be embraced, regardless of feelings, for it is a vital section of the royal road to money mastery. Keep track of every cent that comes into or goes out of your life. Useful attitudes. No leeway. A telescope with one lens a wee bit out of alignment still doesn't allow you to see the stars. The same holds true for human life. A little bit of fudging cuts down the amount of light that can shine through. This is where you get to be ruthless, tough-minded, and absolute. Your commitment to clearing up your relationship with money is really tested here. One of the keys to your success in this program and in life is a shift in attitude from one of laxity and leeway to one of accuracy, precision, and impeccability. By the way, such integrity might work miracles in other aspects of your life. People have lost weight, kept their desks cleared, and patched up broken relationships, all through doing this step. Integrity is integrity is integrity. No judgment, lots of discernment. Judgment, blaming ourselves and others, is labeling things in terms of good and bad. On the road to transforming your relationship with money and achieving financial independence, you will find that judgment and blame do not serve. Discernment, on the other hand, is an essential skill. Discernment is sorting out the true from the false, separating the wheat from the chaff. In the process of writing down every cent that comes into or goes out of your life, you will begin to discern which expenses are fitting and fulfilling, and which are unnecessary, extravagant, or even downright embarrassing. Discernment has to do with that higher faculty we all have, the one that knows the truth, that sees a bigger picture, and recognizes that what we really want is to make a difference before we die. This faculty will be increasingly on duty as you work with the financial program. Aligning your spending with this faculty is the key to financial integrity. Through writing down every cent that comes into and goes out of your life, you are awakening this latent superpower and inviting it increasingly to direct your life. Summary of Step 2. 1. Establish, accurately and honestly, how much money you are trading your life energy for, and discover your real hourly wage. 2. Learn about your money and behavior by keeping track of every cent that comes into and goes out of your life. Money Talk Questions. If you engage in money talks, you'll be surprised at what you discover for yourself. You make the insights your own. You go from agreeing with what we say to knowing the truth for yourself. Using the suggestions in the epilogue for how to have a money talk, raise these questions in your daily reflections with your partner or in social groups. Remember, adding why at the end of a question will take it deeper. Adding how has society shaped my answer to any question will take it wider. There are no right answers. What is money? Describe your relationship with money in 5 words or less. Why those words? Do you experience more stress when you have money or when you don't have it? Finish the sentence. If I had more money, then I'd... Elaborate. Are you earning what you're worth? What belief about money keeps you from being, doing, or having what you want? Chapter 3. Where is it all going? Congratulations, you've made it into the present. Knowing how much money has come into and gone out of your life today, last week, last month, and since your first allowance is a monumental feat, a giant step toward financial intelligence. In terms of where this program will take you, however, you've just begun. The insights you've had, as vivid as they may have been, are just a taste of what's in store. To do steps 1 and 2, you only needed to take the word of some apparent experts, the authors and all the others who have successfully used this program, that this kind of obsessive counting is necessary to break the hold that money has over your life. You've only needed to name and number such tangible items as your income, expenses, bank balances, and possessions. With step 3, however, you'll need to call on more of yourself to make it work. Here, you'll begin the process of evaluating the information you've collected. Do you need a budget? This approach to money is actually the opposite of a budget. Mind you, a budget can be an amazing tool to lasso your wild spending and get it to behave. Based on your income, a budget helps you to plan your spending so that everything is covered every month and you don't impulsively blow the rent money on a pretty dress or utilities money on a late-night online shopping spree. But budgeting is a planning tool, while this program is an awareness of your enough point tool. It's about your uniqueness rather than standard budgeting categories with conventional wisdom advice like housing should be 25 to 35% of your total or food 20% or healthcare 5% to 10% or saving only 5% of your income and crossing your fingers for Social Security. Applying these norms to your life might well lead you down the normal path of 9 to 5 until you're 65. Maybe you're like Justin, though, who's trading 10 hours a week of household work for a room in an older woman's house. No place for that in a budget. Justin is saving to buy a camper. Where would he put that in his budget? He plans to live in it and travel the United States, contacting couch surfing hosts for a driveway to park in. A budget vacation? But he plans to blog about it and invite sponsors to support him. Is that now an income? He wants to learn to forage and possibly hunt. Does that go under food? Entertainment? These categories go to show that not everyone can get their squiggly lives into the straight lines of a spreadsheet. Unlike a budget, step three in this program gives you the freedom of getting clear about money without cutting off a lot of individuality and creativity. Rather than using standard categories and standard percentages and making a spending plan, with this approach, you will discover your patterns from observing how you actually spend your life energy and revealing your own unique relationship with money. Guaranteed, this awareness will change you, not because of an arbitrary financial goal, but because you want nothing more than to spend your life well. Think of it like the difference between dieting and mindful eating. With a diet, you apply a formula to your eating to achieve a result, weight loss. There is a confusing array of diets out there, often utterly contradictory, and people dissatisfied with them migrate from one to the next, seeking salvation from excess pounds. It's imposing change from the outside in. With mindful eating, you slow down. Pay attention to what you are actually hungry for. Without such self-awareness, we might eat when we are tired or thirsty or in need of a walk in the sunshine. With mindful eating, you taste your food. Taste is one way the body senses whether what is being eaten is good for us. You pause often enough to see if your body has had enough, and if so, you stop. It's an inside job guided by the well-being of the body, not conforming to a standard. In a book called Diets Don't Work, Bob Schwartz offers four rules for getting off the diet go-round. 1. Eat when you're hungry. 2. Eat exactly what your body wants. 3. Eat each bite consciously. 4. Stop when your body has had enough. Very simple. All you have to do is be conscious. Being conscious means you become aware of what you are thinking and feeling as you think and feel it. It's cultivating an inner witness that simply observes what is going on with warm awareness, not judging, not evaluating, just curious. And when you find yourself in your old habits, eating when you're bored, alone in the kitchen, between tasks, wanting a treat for a job well done, blue with depression, green with envy, or red with fury, you return to being conscious, skipping the guilt step and just returning to observing hunger, satiation, and motivation. Simple, but not always easy. It takes discovering and exercising some mental muscles that may have atrophied from misuse. You have to identify what hungry is, what full is, what you truly want as opposed to what you crave out of feeling perpetually deprived, and what you are actually eating while you are eating it. This financial program points you in the same direction as mindful eating. 1. You need to identify and follow internal signals, not external admonishments or habitual desires. 2. You need to observe and adjust your patterns of spending over the long term, not what you spend over the short term. This is not about following our or anyone else's budgets with standardized categories and a suggested percentage of income that should go toward each category. This is not about swearing at the beginning of each month that you'll do better. This is not about guilt. It's about identifying for yourself what you need as opposed to what you crave, what purchases or types of purchases actually bring you fulfillment, what represents enough for you, and what you actually spend money on. This program is based on your reality, not a set of external norms. Consequently, its success rests on your honesty and integrity. And here is where this program is different from the tens or hundreds of other recipes for fiscal health. It's based on consciousness, fulfillment, and choice, not on budgeting or deprivation. Step 3 is where you begin to exercise these awareness muscles. If you're out of shape, you may feel some pain, but in reality, there's nothing painful about doing the step. In fact, it's fun. No shame, no blame. Remember the mantra, no shame, no blame. What you are confronting is just the truth about the choices you've been making in your life. No shame, no blame. How fortunate to be able to do this yourself instead of being audited by the IRS. How lucky you are to be doing this now and not in your last hours on earth. No shame, no blame. Remember to use the mantra at those moments when you actually want to hide under the bed or go on a spending spree till you've forgotten what was bothering you or decide that this program doesn't work and give up. No shame, no blame. Anita C. needed something like that mantra to help her survey her closet with this new spotlight of consciousness. No doubt about what was her addiction. Clothes and costume jewelry. She had been a shopaholic. Anytime she was out in her car, she had a compulsion to stop at the mall just to see what was on sale. Somehow this ritual of shopping and spending helped her feel okay about herself. But there it all was, the result of years of addiction, sitting in her closet. It would have been nice if she'd had the conversion experience right then, but she didn't. She continued to shop until the balance tipped and it no longer felt good to her to have so much and not wear it. As an interim measure, she justified her excess by giving it away as presents. It was fun to place things she'd never worn with just the right friend or relative. Slowly, the desire to shop weakened. Then one day, she found herself at one of her favorite department stores, surveying the new colors and sweaters, and consciousness struck. Is this going to be what I do with my life? Is this what it's all going to be about? What am I doing? I have enough already. She left the store empty-handed. Sometime after that experience, Anita discovered that she had lost her desire to shop. If Anita had been working with a standard budget and spending plan, she might not have recognized her shopping as a compulsion. She would have remained a social shopper, denying any kind of underlying problem. But steadily applying consciousness and compassion to her shopping habit, she was able, eventually, to have the profound insight that she already had enough. She is now so allergic to shopping that she's lost a few old friends whose central social ritual is browsing through the mall. But she's gained a lot more. So, having set the context, let's get on with step 3, creating your monthly tabulation. Step 3, monthly tabulation. After a month of keeping track of your income and expenses, step 2, you will have a wealth of specific information on the flow of money in your life, down to the penny. In this step, you will establish spending categories that reflect the uniqueness of your life, as opposed to the oversimplified budget book categories like food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and health. While you still might choose to have such basic categories, within each major category, you will find and separate out numerous important subcategories that will give you vastly more accurate picture of your spending. The fun and challenge of this step will come in discovering your own unique spending categories and subcategories. These categories will be like an encyclopedia of your unique spending habits. They will be perhaps your most accurate description to date of your lifestyle, including all your peculiarities and peccadilloes. This detailed portrait of your life is your true bottom line. Forget the mythology of your life. Forget the story you tell yourself and others. Forget your resume and the list of associations you belong to. When you do step three, you'll have a clear, tangible mirror of your actual life, your income and expenses over time. In this mirror, you will see exactly what you are getting for the time you invest in making money. Establishing categories. In establishing your categories, you will want to be honest and precise without becoming overly fussy. Food. Unless you are very different from other humans, you will have a broad category called food. As you look at your food expenses for the month, however, you may observe that there are actually several different types of food buying that you can usefully track. There is the food you eat at home with your family. There is also the food you eat at home when you have friends or extended family over for dinner. So you might want to have two categories, just us and guests. But don't get fanatic. Don't hover over your dinner guests recording in your little notebook how much and of what they eat. Would you like seconds, Uncle Hal? Could take on a whole new meaning. It is sufficient to establish within the exact total of your grocery bill what portions went to guests. For example, if four extra people are around your dinner table and you normally shop for just you and your partner, approximately two-thirds of that grocery bill should be attributed to guests. The totals are accurate to the penny, but the breakouts from the totals are estimates. Then there is the restaurant category, from grab-and-go lunches at work to dinners out. You could parse that further into too tired to cook and special occasions if eating out is no longer a special occasion and you have a serious and expensive restaurant habit. In our busy lives with maybe 12 hours between leaving for work and coming home, this can seem the only option if you want a clean kitchen and 8 hours of sleep. You might also want to see what snacking is costing you. What do those coffee breaks actually cost a month? What about TV food, the chips and popcorn and candy and soft drinks that so often go hand in hand or hand to mouth while TV watching? You might break it down further to healthy food and junk food if you are curious about where your allegiances really lie and whether you could go organic without going broke. All such spending patterns will show up if you establish categories that reflect your actual behavior rather than just writing everything in a budget book column called food. This precision is not for the purpose of more exact confession to your financial advisor. It's so that when you throw your hands up in disgust, crying, "Where does it all go? I hardly buy anything," you can answer yourself in a firm and steady tone. "It goes to the candy machine on the third floor of my office building." Housing. Your housing category might include mortgage or rent with subcategories of utilities, mortgage deduction, if applicable, as well as recording income from renting the family room to tourists. On the other end of the scale, perhaps you have multiple homes, one in the suburbs, one at the beach, and a small apartment in the city. Having a category for each one can help you see whether renting when needed would be a better bet than owning. 50 years ago, the budgeting rule of thumb was to allow 25% of your income for housing. Now, when people tally up all their costs in this category, they often discover that housing eats up to 40% or more of their income. Motivated by seeing their numbers in black and white, they are finding clever ways to reduce what they spend on a roof over their heads, sometimes down to zero. One couple, whose tech jobs let them live anywhere, have this category by spending summers in a lively, costly city in the northern hemisphere and wintering for next to nothing on out-of-the-way beaches in the southern hemisphere in the winter. A single woman paid off her mortgage in a tourist area by living in her camper on a friend's land in the summer months while she rented out her house with a view. A retired older woman knew from past homeowner experiences what time and money sink ownership can be. She gained a reputation for meticulous caretaking and now is an in-demand house sitter, getting paid while having some of the most elegant roofs in her region over her head. Of course, There are matchmaking websites for house sitters who are willing to travel. See why the standard budget book categories don't work anymore? Clothing. When it comes to clothing, you may find that you aren't getting enough information about your unique spending patterns by simply having one category called clothing. You may need to distinguish between utility and fashion. The desire never to appear in the office in the same outfit twice in a row, for example, or one-upsmanship in elegant attire at social gatherings. In other words, be specific. Make appropriate distinctions. To get an accurate map of your spending patterns, you may need several subcategories. There is the clothing you wear in your everyday home life, the clothing you believe is appropriate attire for the workplace, and whatever specialized apparel you need for recreational activities. One doctor who followed this program to get a handle on how a consistently unaccounted for 20% of his income disappeared discovered that he had real penchant for buying shoes. He had golf shoes, tennis shoes, running shoes, boating shoes, walking shoes, hiking shoes, and climbing shoes, as well as cross-country ski shoes, downhill ski boots, and after-ski boots. Just having a category for shoes helped him find some of that missing income and face the fact that he'd rarely worn anything but comfortable around-the-house slip-ons. He wasn't alone in this shoe fetish. As of 2015, the U.S. footwear industry exceeded $64 billion in sales. A nationwide survey of American women conducted that same year by Consumer Reports National Research Center revealed that the average woman owns 19 pairs of shoes, only four of which she wears regularly. This isn't just accounting. This is a process of self-discovery. It may be the only process of self-discovery that promises to leave you in better shape financially than when you embarked upon it. You may also choose categories that reflect your feelings, not your occasions. Clothes to cheer you up. Clothes to impress a boss or a date. Clothes to fit in. They say clothes make the man or woman, so it's good to see who you are trying to be by what clothes you buy and what that ambition is costing you. Transportation. By using appropriate subcategories for transportation, you may gain insights that save you many hundreds of dollars a year. If you own a car, doing your tallies is a great opportunity to reflect on why you own one at all instead of relying on public transportation. Convenience, status, necessity, fitting in, a sense of freedom? Could you make up for the lack of a car with ride-sharing and short-term rentals or the many car-sharing options now available thanks to hailing services through your phone? In some cities, you can rent your car via a sharing app and your RV. What percentage of your transportation costs come from wrong location, relocation, location? Many people fail to think about walkability. They buy or rent homes in areas with no public transit options or bike paths. A farmer in Kansas might not be able to survive without a truck, but if you moved from the burbs to a few blocks from work, school, and shopping, your transportation expenses might zero out. It's also a good time to review your auto insurance. What portion of your insurance is necessary, and how much is a habit, convention, and buying into your agent's scare tactics? While you're at it, look at anything else overinsured, from your home to antiques, and what category your second car goes under, transportation, hobby, or ostentation. If you don't have a car, are you overspending on pricey cab fares when you could be using public transit or other options? Your technology. Staying informed and connected is a crucial part of modern-day society, and a growing expense over the past decade has been the cost of accessing and sending data. Cell phones, internet, cable access, tablets, and smart watches are rapidly becoming a substantial spending category. If you just have a category called phone, you may miss numerous options for saving. Many people give up their landlines once they see how much staying connected costs. Or they change their cell phone service to one that doesn't have a 2-year contract and buy their phones through Craigslist. With categories called landline, cell phone, and equipment, you can see your patterns more clearly. Think about what technology you need for work versus leisure or personal development. Entertainment. Going to the movies used to be the only way to consume this type of entertainment. But now the movies come to us through home entertainment systems, phones, tablets, computers, and more. It would be revelatory to have an entertainment category in which you break out streaming services as one item, or even more specific, your multiple subscriptions. Do you need them all? What about streaming services for music and your home entertainment center? Is that a site of consumption with upgrading your tech and then having to upgrade your furniture to house your tech and then having to repaint your family room? And do you go clubbing? Do you rent entertainers for your kids' parties and adult parties as well? If you have children, what portion of the services and gadgets you buy for them are under entertainment? Or maybe they fit under babysitting. Should you have a category called children, which might lead you to find less expensive ways to distract them, as well as introduce them to the old kind of fun, like going outdoors? Refining your categories. What makes this sort of ruthless honesty bearable is that you can confront your little sins and indiscretions in the privacy of your own account book, rather than when you get caught. So don't skimp on being truthful if you find yourself face to face with some of your faults and frailties while innocently doing your monthly tabulation. What better way to face the music? If you remember that doing this exercise will lead not to the punishment of a budget, but rather to the freedom of self-acceptance, you'll press on regardless. For example, into what category do you put the part of the food money that you use to play the slots or buy lottery tickets? Yet another moment of truth may come as you vacillate over where to record liquor. Is it food? Is it entertainment? Or is it a drug? It is also important to distinguish between job-related expenses and other expenses. For example, under transportation, you would list separately the cost of commuting and other non-reimbursed work-related transportation expenses. If the same vehicle is used for both commuting and pleasure, then split the costs according to mileage in each category. Similarly, if you use your cell phone for work-related as well as personal calls, those costs should be listed separately. Within your medical category, you might find several subcategories. Sickness, wellness, i.e. what you purchase to keep yourself vital and alive, like vitamins, membership in a health club, annual checkup. Health insurance, even though really, let's be honest, healthcare is what you do for yourself, access to the medical system is sickness care. Prescription drugs, non-prescription drugs, and so on. You can see why this process has allowed people to transform more than just their relationship with money. A further refinement will come as you decide how you want to account for large, unusual expenses like annual insurance premiums, capital expenses like a new refrigerator, the money you put into your IRAs, or a balloon payment on your house. As far as we are concerned, there is no right way to do this. For us, after a year of hearing ourselves make the same excuses every month about the extraordinary expense, this was an unusual month because of the X or the Y or the Z thingamabob that had to be paid. We realized that every month is an unusual month and that these extraordinary expenses are a continuing part of life. You may perfect your categories over time. The exercise should be easy and a lot of fun. It will draw on a blend of honesty and creativity, stimulate your imagination, and challenge your morality, all at the same time. It's better than most video games, TV shows, board games, all rolled into one. Over time, as you do this step, Not only will you refine your categories, you'll find each one settles into a predictable range. You will get clarity about your spending patterns and have an internally generated, rather than externally imposed, picture that is unique, deeply satisfying, and fluid as you grow and change and learn, a far cry from the old budget book categories. Remember, you are also recording all the money that flows into your life. You may want to establish subcategories for income. It's important to distinguish between wages or salaries and tips, and interest or dividend income. Your primary income versus your side hustle. Where will you record the dimes you find in the sidewalk, the quarters you retrieve from the vending machines, and your gambling winnings? If you are an independent contractor, you likely have a separate line for each client on your business accounts. But when you pay yourself, you might just have subcategories for each type of work. Dog walking, handyman, coaching, substitute teaching, renting your guest room to travelers. As you go along in this program, you might have an income category called selling off my clutter and subcategories called eBay, yard sales, and antiques. You also have a growing category called investment income. More on that later. You may also have unusual income months, like when you get an advance for writing a book or finally receive the $70,000 from Uncle Harry's estate. These income categories are not as revelatory as your spending ones. You already have had the wake-up tool to analyze each income stream, your real hourly wage. After you have examined the month's itemized entries from your tracking tool and created categories that accurately depict your spending patterns, devise a way to record expenses under each category in a way that works for you. Figure 3.1 in your PDF will give you an idea of how such a tabulation might be set up. You'll notice that there are a few blank columns. We will talk about these later, but for now, just include them. Totaling it all up. A word of warning. Yes, there are a variety of computer programs and apps that can be useful here, but the meat of this step is categorizing your expenses, and even the best software can't distinguish how to categorize golf. Is it recreation, or is it a job-related expense, because the golf course is where you transact your business? Make sure you aren't assuming you can't just do this step because you don't have the right program. Many do-it-yourselfers enjoy crafting a personal spreadsheet complete with automatic calculations and color-coded cells. We've met other people who simply jot down cryptic codes on a note card in their purse. Others may use monthly bank statements, charts, and graphs as a starting point for their own financial journal. While some online platforms allow you to link bank and credit card accounts for a one-stop summary, it's important you take the time to filter common transactions. These tools are incredibly useful, but the key is finding a system that works for you. Both of the authors did it the old-fashioned way, with paper and pencil and adding up columns of figures by hand. Yes, these steps work brilliantly, even before calculators. Whether by hand or machine, here's the simple process. At the end of the month, you will transfer each entry from your tracking system into the appropriate column on your monthly tabulation. Add up your income columns to get your total monthly income. Add up the expenditures in each column and enter the total of each subcategory at the bottom of that column. Then add the totals for all expenditure categories. This sum is your total monthly expenses. The balancing act. Next, count the cash in your wallet and piggy bank and note the balance of your checking and savings accounts. Now you have enough information to see how closely you have kept track of the money flowing into and out of your life over the past month. If you've kept accurate records and you haven't physically lost any money, The money you actually have at the end of the month in cash and bank accounts will be equal to the money you had at the beginning of the month, plus your total monthly income, minus your total monthly expenses. If you haven't kept accurate records or physically lost some money, you will have lost or gained cash that you can't account for. The difference between your total monthly income and your total monthly expenses, plus or minus